from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who lost his first million before he was 25. Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And we are wrapping up season 30 of Worlds Apart. And this is going to be a very fun show because I'm very excited because the greatest guy I know is here with us here in the studio, Josh Wigler.
You got to meet new people. You need to expand your social circle. You need to get out there, Rob.
Yes.
That's very sad. But I appreciate it.
Yes. The howler monkey of podcasting is here.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm here to throw some feces at you guys.
And rip this season limb from limb.
Limb from limb.
And beat us over the head with it.
That's right.
Because he's feeling threatened right now because his precious Worlds Apart is over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Feeling very, very threatened right now. Yes. No, feeling very amped up. Crazy, crazy, crazy time to be a Survivor fan right now.
Yeah. So this is very fun. Josh is here in the studio. He was at the finale last night. Then we were both at the after party that was thrown. And we definitely hung out last night, but we've also refrained from anytime either of us has had a good story to tell us. We say, okay, we just save it for the podcast.
Yeah, we haven't been talking to each other about any
of that. We're trying not to talk about too much of that and saving it all for you guys. And this is going to be a very fun show. Of course, this morning I did my exit interviews. I spoke with the top five baby from this season. That is all up on robswebsite.com. I talked with Mike. Then it was a double interview with Will and Carolyn, and then also with Rodney and Sierra. Josh also did his exit interviews, which you can read on parade.com. Of course, we have a link to go right to Josh's stuff there with the exit interviews on parade.com. Go to robswebsite.com/parade.
Yes, okay. Do it.
Yes. And also, of course, last night I wrapped up the show with Tyson. Did our know-it-alls minus Steven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A somber affair.
It was a...
But it's exciting. It's crazy. Steven is back, baby.
Steven Fishback is en route to parts unknown right now.
Parts unknown, getting ready to cope with a lifetime of being the first person voted out of Survivor Second Chance.
Do you really think Steven will be the first one?
I don't think,
he will either.
I don't think he'll be the first one.
I think that Steven is like... I think that people have the perception of him that he's like a nerd, but he is like... He's the most, he's like an alpha male nerd.
Yeah. That's a really good way of putting it. He is alpha nerd. And I think the more that he's going to get the chance to talk to these people, I think people are going to really like Steven a lot.
Unless he totally flames out. And I don't want to spend too much time, you know, going through each possibility on Survivor Second Chance. But unless he totally just gets out there and is like super paranoid and just starts like zaning it.
Yeah.
Like, I think he'll be fine.
You think he's going to zane
I don't think he's going to zane it. Right. I'm saying that if that's the only way I could see him being the first person voted out.
No, I think he'll do okay. We can talk about that later.
Okay. So what we're going to do here today is we're going to talk about everything from last night. We're also going to take your voicemails. We're going to take some of your comments also and talk about everything that's going on here as we stand the day after the Survivor finale.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Speaking of Steven, when we did this for San Juan del Sur, I responded to Steven being a jerk about saying that going to the finale, being at the finale is a very boring experience to watch the Survivor reunion. I guarantee you that Steven Fishback was not bored last night as he was sitting in the room for the Survivor finale.
Yeah. Now, you were at the finale last night and you were you like backstage with any of this stuff or you were just all that they just seat you?
I'm in the audience, and I've been to the past three now. I've been to Worlds Apart, San Juan del Sur, and Cagayan, and I'm always in the same general area. I'm like very back row, middle of the auditorium. If you look all the way to the top back row in the middle of the room, you can find me. I was wearing a blue plaid shirt, rocking the Rob look last night, rocking Rob.
Yes.
So easy to spot me. But no, I had a full view of everything that was going on.
Yeah. Okay. So you didn't get to see any of the Second Chance people beforehand.
No.
They were all sort of under lock and key.
No, they were on complete lockdown. You know, they were in whatever green room that they were in that we saw on the show when Jeff was going back there. Didn't see them at all until they came out very quickly before the whole cast got revealed. One thing that I did see as I was walking into the finale, as I was getting ready to step inside was the Survivor Second Chance bus was like the first thing that I saw.
Yeah.
And the,
was that prominently displayed?
It wasn't prominently displayed. It was right outside of the parking area of where people had to park to get into the show. It was like kind of just casually hanging out on the side of the road. And I was just looking at it being like, holy crap.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there was nobody. I mean, especially in the Survivor fandom community and, you know, not even like people that are into spoilers or anything. How did nobody tail the Survivor Second Chance van?
Do we know that? I think we would have. Didn't?
I think there would be a post be a on post, Survivor yeah. Reddit today. Yes. So I followed the Survivor Second Chance van.
Right. That's a great point. That's a great point. I think the moment that it
like
was
like with Shireen with her head out the window.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that the moment that people found out that there was a van, anyone in Los Angeles who was in like driving distance of CBS Studios should have gone there and just been prepared to gun it.
Yeah. I'm also surprised that Shane Powers didn't slash the tires of the Survivor Second Chance van.
Yeah, frankly, I'm a little surprised that I'm even just sitting here right now. I as being in the auditorium, I felt like my life could be in danger.
Yeah. Okay. So much craziness. You know, we also talked so much about the Bitter 12 and everything like that, and we ran into various members of them last night as well.
Yeah.
So I don't want to, you know, get too far out into talking about this without at least mentioning that we're also especially excited. So many of you guys who are listeners of the podcast know that Josh and I have been working on a 30 season rewatch of Survivor for some time now. We started it last summer.
Yeah, we're getting very close to a full year since we started recording. I think we started in July of 2014. Getting to be the anniversary.
And so we are very excited to announce that we did last summer, every week, during the winter, in between San Juan del Sur and the start of Survivor Worlds Apart, every Friday, we released one chapter of our 30 season rewatch, The Evolutionist Strategy, Volume 1.
Yeah.
That was chapters 1 through 10. Well, starting on Friday, we are officially announcing or releasing, we've already announced it, we are releasing The Evolutionist Strategy, Volume 2.
Yes.
Covering all the way from Survivor Guatemala all the way through Survivor Heroes versus Villains.
Yes, yes. And it is about a million hours long, I think.
I think it's I haven't counted the hours.
It's long.
I think it's actually longer than Volume 1. We actually spend more time.
I can't imagine that it's not.
Yeah.
It gets bigger and bigger the further into it we get. I mean, it's every chapter is an audiobook.
Yes.
It's a new audiobook every week.
Yes. With the creme de la creme being the Survivor Heroes versus Villains chapter, which is approximately 18 hours.
Yeah, it's close to 20.
Yes.
For season 20.
Yeah, I believe it's over 18 hours for Heroes versus Villains. So we're very excited to release The Evolutionist Strategy. Volume 2 is coming out this Friday.
Yes.
Friday the 22nd, the start of Memorial Day weekend here in the U.S., Volume 2, Chapter 11 is about to drop, Guatemala.
Guatemala, man. It's damn Guatemala, man. I can't wait for you to listen to it, man.
Yes. And we actually had a lot of fun recapping Guatemala.
Guatemala is one of my favorite chapters that you and I recorded because it was such a thrill because we're talking about a bunch of seasons now that you weren't super familiar with going into the rewatch. And like Guatemala for me, And you say it early on in the chapter, I felt like this was going to be a big X factor for you.
Yeah.
Probably one of the bigger X factors that we would encounter. Just not a season that a lot of people talk about, not a season not a lot of people really remember. It isn't a season where anybody other than Stephanie has ever come back or seemingly been in the mix to come back. And you walked away from it loving Guatemala.
Yeah.
Guatemala, I think, is like the big surprise of the book for you.
Yeah, I really did enjoy Guatemala. There was a couple of chapters that I enjoyed more than I thought I was going to.
Gabon, right?
No, Gabon is one I enjoyed less than I expected to. But Fiji is one that I, you know, like all the chapters that people, all the seasons that people really beat up on.
Yeah,
that we came into. I'm like, okay, well now I'm going to expect this one to be really bad.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed some of them a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah.
Of course, Guatemala has a lot of things going on. It's the first time that they're going to bring in a returning player to play with new people. It's also going to be the first appearance of the hidden immunity idol.
Yes,
which is going to come up later on in the season. You have everything that's going on with Danny, which we're going to discuss in some detail here today in talking about Mike and what he was able to do and the parallels between Danny's game and Mike. So there's a lot of stuff from Survivor Guatemala, and you have some really fantastic characters, including Judd.
Damn, I love Judd, man. I can't get enough of Judd, man. He's my best friend, man.
Yeah, he's great. And of course, you know, between Amy and Josh's favorite Lydia.
I love the fishmonger.
Yeah.
We're going to get into a lot of fights about the fishmonger, you and I, in this chapter.
A lot of stuff coming up. If you want to check that out over the long holiday weekend, what we're doing here is we want to give you a little bit of a sample. And what we did in, you know, Evolution Strategy Volume 1, we made the first chapter available for you guys to listen to. And we're going to do the same thing here with Chapter 11 for the next week up until the end of May 29th, next Friday. For 1 week only, we are going to make the Evolution Strategy Chapter 11, Guatemala, available for free. Go to robswebsite.com/store. You can purchase the chapter of Evolution Strategy for Guatemala, and it is on sale for $2.99. We're giving you this coupon code, Scumbags.
Scumbags, man. That's
Scumbags, plural. You can get it for free.
I hope you get bit by the Evolution of Strategy, man, you scumbags.
It's going to say it's $2.99. This code is going to work for 1 week, and then type in Scumbags. You get it for free, and then check it out, and hopefully you want to continue on with us for the rest. And if you want to get the entire volume two, you could, of course, do that there. It's $19.99 for the full, probably like 85, 90 hour volume.
Long book.
We will release a new audiobook every Friday. Next Friday will be Panama. The Friday after that will be Cook Islands. And then
Cook Islands too.
Yes. Yes. Don't make jokes that people haven't heard yet.
Sure.
And then once we get to that, then we'll be at like the half, after Heroes vs. Villains, we'll be at the halfway point of the summer. And then we'll be halfway in between this and Second Chance. And then right after that, volume two is going to run right into volume three.
Double booking it.
And then volume three we'll put out there for you guys as well. But the cool thing about what we did and the timing that we did this, it's really like, we had no idea this was going to happen a year ago when we started doing this, is that there's going to be a lot of people that we're going to talk about here in volume two, and then ultimately in volume three, that are going to be in the Survivor Second Chance. So Absolutely. It's going to be a great primer. Of course, we're going to talk about Terry in this volume. We're going to talk about Steven. We're going to talk about PG. We're going to talk about Monica. Who else from the Middle Ages?
That's the crew from the Middle Ages. Okay. Unfortunately, not Shane. We will talk about Shane, but not in the context of Second Chance. But I think that's gonna be really exciting when we haven't even started recording Volume 3 yet.
Yeah,
we're about to start doing that. And I think that knowing that there's 12 contestants on Second Chance that are in Volume 3, and I think that that's really going to energize talking about these recent seasons that you've been podcasting about for years, but now you're going to get to go back with the benefit of knowing the full story of each season, but also being able to look at a guy like, what do we learn about Vidas Bruskauskas that's going to inform how he might perform on a second time out?
Right, and for me, I think part of the fun of what we get to do on this as opposed to what we do now, it's like we're sort of like in the battles here right now. We're sort of like, okay, well, what would happen if Carolyn does this? Is she gonna win the game? What if Rodney does this next week?
Yeah,
you know, we're always looking forward on the podcast. Like the Evolution Strategy is interesting to me because we get to we know how it's gonna work.
Spoilers.
We know the spoilers, yeah. And we get to say, okay, at this point, we know that this person is going to be voted out next week. What should they be doing at this point?
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like a different way to look at it. And it's something that I really have enjoyed getting to do with you because you are a fun guy to talk about these things with.
It's been fun.
It's a very fun ride. All right. So I have a feeling we're probably selling past the close for most of you guys. You already know about most of this. If you want to check that out, or if this is the first time you're hearing about it and you want to see more about it, go to evolutionstrategy.com. You could see more about what the whole thing is, and then all of the chapters that are available. Chapters 1 through 10 are available now, and then Guatemala, and volume 2 is dropping on Friday. Okay, robswebsite.com/store to pick up the new chapters, or if you want to hear more about it, go to evolutionofstrategy.com. All right, Josh, can we talk about last night?
I'm dying to talk about last night.
All right. Why don't you start off with your experience at the live show? Because we haven't talked to anybody yet who was there in the building.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still stressed out. It was so stressful. It was a very stressful night. I was in the back row, shaking the whole time, really, really hoping that some of these people that I really wanted to, you know, people who I'd been voting for every day, I wanted to see them get back, very nervous that some of them weren't going to make it, nervous for the heartbreak, to the, to the point that, you know, there were times where that was just all I was thinking about while the episode was going on. But the room was explosive. You know, it's I really enjoyed the experience of watching the finale at the finale. I've found it to be really exciting every time I've done it. But this has been the most excited room that I've been in so far, and it was all about Mike. This crowd loves some Mike Holloway. So Mike Holloway was the big winner of the night, obviously, but very much the big winner in the room. And it was very, very exciting to see all of Mike's triumphs last night responded to by, you know, a crowd of hundreds of people.
Yeah, seemed like, you know, Mike was the person that most people were pulling for last night. Did the crowd seem preoccupied with Second Chance?
No, not so much. I think it was really just me and my Jewy anxiousness. I was just in the back, like shaking in a corner.
Yeah, I was kind of like I wasn't say I was shaking, but I was really like, oh my God, I'm really nervous about all of this.
Like I saw the when they brought the Second Chancers out, and I see Steven there. I felt like Steven, you're so close. I want to reach out and help you. I want to save you. It was intense. It was very intense.
He didn't need saving.
He didn't need saving. He's good.
He did it. He did it. Okay, so now we have the show last night. Do you have any stories from like behind the scenes?
Some behind the scenes stories. When Mike won the blindfold maze challenge.
Right. And anytime you can get a blindfold maze challenge, I mean, there's no better indicator of who deserves to be the sole survivor, who can outwit, outplay, and outlast than blindfold people and put them in a maze.
Right.
The truest test of survivor skills.
Your favorite for very personal reasons. Your favorite. The moment that he won that, you know, on the show, they make a big deal out of his mom thinking that she had screwed up Survivor for him. Mm-hmm. When she saw that he won, she and the whole Holloway family just like was through the roof, just like jumped up. It was.
Did you notice who else was with the Holloway family?
Who's that?
Yeah. A lot of people didn't necessarily pick that up.
Yep.
But there was somebody who just showed up there.
And we'll just show up.
Yes.
Yes. No Baylor, but Missy was there. Missy was sitting right in front of me, basically.
Yeah.
She was sitting one row ahead of me. I don't know who she was with.
All right, so she was in front of you?
Yes.
Get in the back seat and let me drive.
Yeah. She was driving. I was in the back seat. And she was getting up very frequently. She was standing up very frequently and going off somewhere, and I think, to talk to the Holloways. I have no idea what the connection is, but she was very invested in the Holloway situation.
Well, I can tell you that, I mean, they're both from Texas. I think yes. they live in close proximity, and she was on last season. Mike is, you know, a very nice guy, and I'm sure that they've made the connection. And I think she was actually there to, I think somebody had an extra ticket. Uh-huh. I think that's what it was. And she was like, you know, there and hanging out with Mike's mom.
Got it. Yeah. I think she was there with not Baylor, but does Baylor have a sister?
You know, I don't know. Was Baylor at the thing last night?
I did not see
Baylor.
Because
there was a girl that looked like that. I thought I was going to go over and say hi.
I saw Baylor at a pre-finale party on Tuesday night. So
okay.
It's so possible.
She, okay. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people are saying like, oh, is Mike dating Missy?
Yeah.
And no, that is not what's happening.
Okay. You're clearing something up for me as well. I was wondering. Yeah. But she was getting up a lot and you know, walking over to the Holloways.
Just friends. Okay.
Just friends. And someone made a comment, that I overheard. No wonder she broke her leg out on San Juan del Sur because she was getting up so often.
Is that one? Well, people are catty.
I'm just reporting what I heard.
Missy was getting up too much. No wonder she broke her leg.
I'm just reporting what I observed. I'm just
talking to you.
Well, I heard
Smarty
it. Poo.
Smarty poo.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that was great. We found out that Joe's father has Joe hair. He has long hair as well, and this became a topic of conversation in between segments. And the reason that both he and Joe have long hair is because they're
undefeated Dothraki warriors.
That's correct. Yeah. I think Joe's hair is a little bit longer, so he's the more respectable one. But his father told him to cut his hair. Joe wasn't going to do it. Joe said, I bet you $1 that you will cut your hair before I cut mine. And so for $1 bet, these two men refused to cut their hair. That's a story that we learned.
Okay.
It was very nice. We had an amazing moment right before the Second Chance reveal. The Second Chance reveal was a very, very, very tense thing in the room, on the show, everything. But there was this amazingly surreal moment of levity that happened right before.
Oh.
Jeff, you know, the same spiel that he gave on the show talking about how he felt terrible for the people who weren't going to make it doesn't mean that you won't come back. He gave that spiel in the room to the Second Chancers before the camera started rolling. And then he gets in position to start rolling, start shooting it. And he says, I don't believe he realized he was mic'd, but he says, holy shit, I'm feeling it. And then immediately realized that everybody in the room just heard him say that. And he said, sorry, kids. And then he decided to reveal something that happens in his household when he curses. He said something to the effect of, when I swear, my kids pinch my nipples. So my nipples are gigantic and red. This is a Jeff Probst quote.
Oh my God, that is putrid.
And there was a lot of laughter, but my jaw was just dropped. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So that's...
You better relax, bro.
That's more than you want to know about Jeff Probst, but that was the most shocking moment of the night.
Wow.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Very bizarre. So that's something that you can now learn about Jeff Probst.
Yeah.
That's not right.
It's not. It's really not.
This was on the house mic.
Yeah, this is like how he corrected cursing in front of a bunch of kids. This is the story he chose to tell.
And how did the other people in the room react?
Yeah, there was a lot of laughter, and it was just such a surreal moment for me. You know, I thought it was very funny, but I couldn't believe that is something that he said out loud.
Yeah. So then you came out to the after party. I got there probably around like 10:30. I walked in.
You walked in and you had a
first person I see.
An amazing thing. I watched this happen.
I walked into the room. The first person that I see is Dan Follett.
Just close your mouth, open your ears, and just watch what happens.
Yeah, and he
and watch what happens.
He didn't break your arms or anything. It's amazing.
Yeah, I walked in and I was like it was very. And I'm like, hey! And he's like, you
son of a bitch.
No, and Dan was very upset about what happened in the show. And actually a lot of the cast members were upset for, like, in talking to the season 30 people, they were annoyed for a couple of reasons. One, they felt like the Dan Will thing overshadowed their season.
Right.
You know, if you were going to take how many minutes of the finale were spent with them, maybe 35 minutes and then cut out commercials. You know, maybe there was like 20, 25 minutes of screen time for them. Probably 10 to 15 of those were on Dan and Will about Shireen.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically everything Worlds Apart related was talking about Mike and then talking about Dan and Will. I feel like they did it wrong and not in terms of, addressing the controversy. I'm glad that they did. I think honestly I thought that Jeff did a very good job talking about all that stuff. I feel like they should have talked to Will first. Because he's giving you shorter sound bites. I think that he is the more recent offender too. I think his story with Shireen is the bigger story. And, you know, starting with Dan created for a very long-winded segment where there's not a lot of time left. So I think that you should have started with Will and then gone to Dan.
Well, let's just put a pin in that. And I got a couple of voicemails about that.
Cool, great.
And we'll talk. So they were annoyed about that.
Yeah.
That ate up so much of their time. And then they were also annoyed that it was like, you know, 15 minutes left. Like, all right, Survivor 30. Thank you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was sort of like it got paid forward from Survivor San Juan del Sur, where we spent the last 10, 15 minutes talking about, like, all right, let's talk to no collar, blue collar. Is there anybody that's a white collar person in the audience? Is there any blue collar person that's in the audience?
Yeah, we completely moved away from that.
So like the 15 minutes of their reunion show actually came in the San Juan del Sur. We had to, you know, pay the bill, Survivor 30.
Yeah.
And so they had to, their time was cut short on the stage. They were literally run off the stage.
At least they were all on stage.
Yeah. What would you rather be? Would you rather be somebody in the pre-jury from Survivor Karamoan and be not even on the stage, but there for the whole time, or somebody from the pre-jury from the Survivor Worlds Apart where you were on the stage, but you didn't get asked a question and you weren't there for as long?
I think probably Karamoan. Because I would not have wanted to sit on stage for that really, 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 really super awkward conversation.
Right. And it always gets talked about how the Karamoan people didn't get on the stage.
Yeah.
And somebody somewhere on the internet, it was probably on Reddit, they had, how the Bitter 12 is going to look after the reveal.
Right.
And they cut to that shot of everybody from the Survivor Karamoan sitting in the jury.
That's great.
Bitter 12 or the Disappointed Dozen.
I like the Done Dirty Dozen.
The Done Dirty Dozen, yeah. And I've also seen the Left Out 11.
Yeah.
So, of course, Mike, he's the first person. He's ineligible.
He's good. He's having a great night.
Saw a lot of those people out last night.
Yes.
And, the first I saw Jim Rice out.
Yep.
I talked with Max, talked with Troyzan. Who else?
Stephanie.
Stephanie. I think Sabrina was there. I didn't talk to her.
I didn't see
Sabrina. Who else?
No Culpepper, no Shane.
Yeah, they weren't there.
They were not there.
And, it was really hard for them. I felt bad for Michaela was there also.
Michaela.
And you all look crazy. They didn't vote her in.
The viewers don't even like you, Michaela.
No, stop. Because they were very disappointed.
Yeah.
They were bummed out.
But, I feel like it could have been, I was really nervous for those people in terms of, how they would take it and how they would respond and everything. And of course they were disappointed. But a lot of them were drinking and happy at times too, it could have been worse, I guess is the point for some of them anyway.
It could have been worse. I mean, Jim seemed like he was in, decent spirits.
Yeah.
Troyzan was bummed.
I think a guy like Jim who knew he was a long shot. I mean, obviously wanted this so badly, but I didn't really get to talk to him. I was like kind of in a peripheral circle while you were talking to him. But to me, it seemed like he knew he was a long shot. He was obviously disappointed, but he seemed like he was able to move on and accept it pretty quickly. I think it was probably really rough on the people who really were convinced that they had it.
Yeah, and to me, I felt like some of the girls that I spoke to were really bummed out. Like Natalie seemed really sad. Like,
yeah. What was your conversation with her like?
No, it's like I was telling her, it's like Natalie, I really meant it. I felt like that you were gonna, if you were out there, I feel like that you had a good shot. And she's like, yeah, I just like really, like yeah. I'm like, come
you got
on.
My hopes up. You told me I'd win.
No,
I was circling no, I was, on my calendar I, every no, day. She was, Natalie wins Survivor on she
was,
July.
She was really sad, and yeah. Stephanie Valencia was really upset.
Yeah.
Both.
It's tough. I was surprised that Natalie didn't make it. I really thought that she would, because Jeff kept talking about her in interviews, kept bringing up Natalie Tenorelli. I felt like she'd get the Boss and Rob bump, but I guess not.
Yeah. I guess it's a mild surprise to see Monica get the call instead of Natalie. But we did have, at least in our exit polling, that we had Natalie was in that group of the bottom five.
Right.
But, actually, who is probably the most surprising was Carolyn. And
yes.
And I had sort of like the Pete Campbell moment with Carolyn, like Carolyn, how you doing? And she was sort of like the
not great, Rob.
Yeah, not great, not good,
not great, Rob. Yeah, yeah.
Because this was the worst case scenario for Carolyn.
Yeah, I spoke with Carolyn on the red carpet. And, we had lots of she had lots of interesting things to say about her game. But this was the elephant in the room, and I kind of just brought it up right away. And she was very clearly not altogether present in the moment. I think pretty upset, pretty unhappy, and you cannot blame her. She, that's really unfortunate. And I mean, I'm, spoiler alert, I'm very happy with the cast that got selected. But I do, my heart goes out to Carolyn in a big way. Cause that's she was in a tough spot.
And she was really, mad at everybody else.
You couldn't let me win that for my kids, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. She's mad at all the voters.
She's pissed. She's pissed. No, it's unfortunate. Yeah.
And we talked about this in the exit interview this morning, too. And then a bunch of the cast members were out last night, I think. Just about everybody. Any notable exceptions that you can't recall?
No one that I can recall.
Well, Shireen.
Sure, Joe and Shireen were nowhere to be found. It was a big moment when Mike finally showed up. He showed up a little bit late into the party. And myself and someone else whose name I didn't catch were at the bar ordering drinks. And we realized that Mike came in. And we started the do the happy dance chant. And he did the happy dance in the middle of the room. It was great.
Yeah. Okay. So a very fun night with everything.
It was good.
I saw Jen Brown there.
Okay.
I wanted to be friendly. I wanted to say hi to Jen Brown.
Yeah.
And I said to her, Jen, I just wanted to come over. Can I say hi to you? And she said, no.
What? She said, no.
Just shut up, man.
Really?
No, I mean, I think that maybe she was joking, but I just said, okay.
And that was it?
That was it. I just let
her. Wow.
I let it go. She said, no.
Wow, Jen Brown.
I mean, it was a stupid question that I asked, but she didn't follow up no with, you know, I'm just kidding.
Wow. Yeah, she's... Okay.
I'll just let it go.
Not a fan of the Rob that sucks.
I don't think that that's the case, but... Yeah. I think that she just felt like that was a stupid question.
Maybe she's sick of you using that shut up man quote.
I don't know. If it was fine when we did the exit interview. I think that she was just like
over it.
No, I don't even know. I have no idea. Yeah. I'm in my head, like I was sort of like, oh, I just asked a dumb question of can I say hi to you?
Uh-huh.
And then she was just like breaking my balls about it. But maybe now you're making me think it's something different. It's
you've done something more sinister. You've done something.
Okay, so we have so much to get to here. Let's jump into some of these voicemail questions.
Let's do it.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. So let's see. What do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about Second Chance stuff? You want to talk about Worlds Apart stuff?
I mean, I'm so excited about Second Chance, but it is the World Apart finale. Should we give 30 its due first?
Okay. Let's do some stuff from Worlds Apart.
Yep.
And let's go ahead and let's start off with a question that I've been wrestling in my head with, and one of the things that we've done on the Evolution of Strategy, or one of the things that I've done, is I have a running winners ranking where I rank the dominance of each winner on their season and compare them, and then I sort of like fill them in on the list.
Yeah.
And so certainly how winners did is something that's always top of mind for me, and that's a question from Austin.
Hey, Rob and Josh. So I think it's safe to say that Mike played a pretty impressive game, but how would we compare it to other winners who played similar games, such as Danny Boatwright in Guatemala and Chris in Vanuatu? Personally, I feel that Chris played the best out of those three because he had to use social and strategic skills to get himself in the end. How would you rank these three players, and what is the more impressive strategy? Working yourself into the majority lines and getting to the end, or just winning immunities and making them self-turn on each other? You know what happens when your voicemail gets played on Rob as a podcast? Will you do the happy dance, baby? Woo!
Do it! Do the happy dance!
I'm not gonna do...
You win!
I'm not gonna do the happy dance.
He's doing it right now.
Baby. Do the happy dance!
Rob is doing the happy dance right now.
I'm not. Okay.
It's not a good version.
All right. So, to me, I think that the players that, most represent, or probably did the closest to what Mike was able to accomplish, are probably... top of mind, Chris and Danny.
Yeah.
But there's also, and this is a similar question that I'm going to bring this one in also. Here is a question. This is from Jordan, and he wants to know if Mike is more like a different winner of Survivor. Here is Jordan.
What's up, Rob? It's Jordan from Vancouver. So tell me I'm wrong, but Mike wins this game pretty much by going on an immunity run all the way. And that's the main reason he got it done. And he's probably going to go down as a pretty solid winner. Now, Fabio, on the other hand, also went on a big immunity run to win the game. But he's going to be far less memorable. So what are the big differences you see between Mike and Fabio as winners? Love the show. Peace.
Okay. So these are all people that won. They were going to get voted out, and then they won immunity challenges and took it down. Bob Crowley, you could put him in that category.
Sure.
Jenna Maraska as well.
Yes.
Jenna Maraska wins the final two immunity challenges. And if I recall, she was going to get voted out as well.
You would remember that.
Yes. But to me, Mike's feat, first off, is most impressive because his run started at final nine.
Yeah. Right, like, around there.
He didn't start like Fabio at final five and win the final, like final five and final four immunities. Is that what Fabio did?
We'll find out in a little bit.
Soon. Yeah. You know, Chris did he win every one down the stretch? What was it?
No, there were times when he was unprotected.
Yeah. And so it is very tough. I think he wins it at six, right?
Yeah.
Does he win it at five also?
He has four and three. I feel like he's exposed at five.
Okay. but he's the swing vote in between the two sides of two there. You know, Mike had to, you know, run this from all the way back. He almost has to go. He's kind of more like Terry in some ways, where Terry not only wins the challenges, he also has the immunity idol also.
Yeah.
So Terry's like doubly protected most of these times. But Terry goes on this run where people are trying to get him out. And there's other players that go on a run also in, you know, like Colby and people like that. But he wasn't in danger.
Exactly.
Kelly in the first Survivor is another person that, you know, it's debatable how much she was in danger.
She was potentially in danger.
But at least one time.
Yeah.
You know, at least at Final Five and at least at Final Four, she was going to get voted out, but she won the immunities. And it's very appropriate that she's there in the building that night.
Yeah.
Where to see what Mike did. But unlike Chris or Danny, Mike was never able to not get voted out and not win the immunity or play the idol.
Right. So, yeah, he was covered the whole way through.
So what Mike did physically to me is more impressive than anybody else.
Okay.
Because he did it. He did it when it counts. The Terry thing is debatable because, you know, there was no Aris that was out there. You know, when I talked to Terry in my Second Chance interview, he was talking about Aris as an athlete and maybe, you know, talking up Aris makes Terry look good. But he's talking about how Aris can, you know, slam dunk a basketball from the foul line.
Right.
And, you know, Aris.
You're saying Mike didn't have an Aris out there.
There was no Aris
out
there.
There was Joe, but as soon as he slipped up, he was gone.
Right. So,
yeah.
This would be like, you know, if Aris wasn't there, and ironically, Danielle, captain of sports, is going to win the final immunity challenge and Terry doesn't win that. But it was very impressive to me what Mike did physically.
Yeah, where does Mike, you know, forget the winner ranking. Where does Mike land for you in terms of all-time challenge competitors?
Boy, very high.
Very high.
Very high up, yeah.
And is that the most impressive aspect of his game, is his physical game?
Yes.
I think, you know, one of the things that certainly is going to separate him from somebody like Fabio and keep him closer to Chris and Danny company, though, and really, I think closer to Chris company, is, you know, he had a lot of crazy ideas, innovative ideas strategically that don't always work, that often didn't work, but he was thinking outside the box. He was thinking about ways to win people over. That's not really something that Fabio was doing too much.
Right. No, I think that Mike is out of Fabio's league.
Yeah,
you know, Fabio just won challenges and was likable to me. Mike, and I've said this before in the podcast, that Mike reminds me of Tony in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
because both of those guys, you know, they hustled, and both of them, you know, I think just depending on the players that they were with, yet people could have easily been turned off by Tony's intensity. He happened to be with a group that wasn't as turned off with his intensity as the people that played with Mike were turned off by his intensity at times.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's the Vlachos effect, I think. I really do think that that happened. I think that that's a huge influence on Mike's game. I think that Tony's win in Cagayan, if not permanently, then at least for the near term, has really changed the game in terms of the electricity that we're seeing from the people who've won since him. You know, Natalie, too, she really turns it on in the final stretch of 29. And Mike, even though his plans aren't necessarily working, he's running at a speed that nobody else is running at.
And almost like he's opposite of Tony, where Tony always had the numbers. Like Mike from Final Nine on never has the numbers.
Right.
And he's just like, he's scrambling and he's working as hard as he can to try to make things happen. And he's spying on people and stuff like that. But he's just, nobody is willing to let him in.
Yeah. And Tony didn't really have, he had immunity idols that he found. But he wasn't a big immunity challenge.
Yeah, I don't even think he won a challenge.
I don't think he won, yeah.
But I do think that they have some similarities.
Yeah, but they were both always covered, you know, whether it was Mike being covered by having immunity or Tony being covered by always having the numbers. You know, they were always covered.
And again, and one of the things that we'll do when we get to Evolution of Strategy, Volume 3, the final chapter is going to be Survivor 30, Worlds Apart. We'll be able to go back and look at Mike's game and get a better sense of it. But sort of just off the top of my head, I think he's in that conversation with Chris and with Danny in that tier. And I think he's probably, well, he's certainly a better challenge competitor than Danny. He is going to have more immunity wins than Danny. But What do we value more? That Danny stayed off the radar. Mike was 100% dead center on the radar. And Danny was able to swing votes her way. Chris was able to swing votes her way or his way. Mike isn't able to do that. So I think that's going to be a fun discussion when we get there. But
I
think
wait.
that's the area that we're looking at on the board of on a scale from, Chris, Danny, Mike, rank them in some
in a similar spot
in some order.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I like that. I agree with that completely.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk about this because you almost brought it up, or you brought it up a little bit. This is a question from Chris.
Hey, Rob, it's Chris from Mississippi. I love the show. I've been a longtime listener. This is my first time calling in. My question is, do you think the Mike Holloway effect is going to be in play with season 31? Given that they just finished watching season 30 and are headed out to play, do you think there are going to be some strong guys who are going to struggle around the merge and maybe shortly after because of Mike's dominance and immunity runs towards the final tribal council? Thanks and have a great day.
All right. Mike Holloway effect. But how come there's no Natalie Anderson effect? How come there's no Miss Survivor effect?
Well, because no one had seen her season.
And everybody forgot it now?
Yeah. No, I'll never forget Sam Wendell, sir.
Okay.
You know how much I
If there was a Natalie Anderson effect, what is it?
That you do the most badass thing humanly possible at the final five with an immunity idol.
Yeah. Okay.
And make me fall in love with you forever.
Wow.
I love Natalie. She's amazing.
Miss Survivor.
She's terrific.
Were you surprised that Nadia wasn't one of the second chance people?
Yeah, I am. I wonder if CBS just thought that'd be too confusing.
Yeah. Well, I think.
What if they have Nadia in the mix, but Natalie is the one who goes out and saves Nadia's reputation? I don't know that they would know. I don't know that anyone would know. Undercover Natalie.
I think the thing with Nadia is that I feel like the same thing where Hayden ends up getting cut, where I think that what it is, or what I had heard, is that it doesn't get on because, well, he already played Big Brother. So it's not really a second chance for Hayden. It was like Survivor was his second chance, any kind of one.
Thumbs down. Thumbs down on that. I think that might be true, but I think that that's lame.
And then just like Nadia, I mean, technically this is Nadia's fourth chance that she did Amazing Race twice, and then she does Survivor. And then this is really a fourth chance for Nadia.
Right. I mean, listen, I'm not mad that Nadia wasn't on that list.
I just think it would have been fun.
It would have been fun. If that's the reason why Hayden isn't on there, if it's not that Hayden, wasn't interested, and there have been people who have come on to your show and said that Hayden was interested, and that's the reason that Hayden isn't allowed on, I think that sucks.
Okay. So Mike Holloway factor. Mike Holloway effect.
I don't know that there's a Mike Holloway effect. I think it's the Vlachos effect. I think that this is the Vlachos effect still in play, and I don't know that there is a Mike Holloway effect.
What about what Chris is suggesting, that the Mike Holloway effect is anybody who is a physical threat after the merge? Is that just reinforced of you have to go? If you are somebody who's winning challenges, if you do not win a challenge, you are out.
Right. And it's been a while, I feel like, since we've had that be like the main reason to go after somebody. That used to be a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly
it was out. Now is it back in?
Maybe it is. I think that with Mike, though, we are talking about one of the greats as a challenge competitor. I think, obviously it's pretty close to the end of the season. The season's still fresh, but I don't think that that's unrealistic to say that Mike Holloway, when I talked to him on the carpet, I brought it up. We talked about that he's in this stratosphere of people who've won these challenges five times, with Ozzy and Terry and Colby and Tom. And he's on the list now. And he says, like, it's crazy. Like, I shouldn't be mentioned in the same breath as them. I said, obviously you should. And obviously he should. Mike is an all-time great challenge performer. So I think we're talking about somebody who is...
Who would you put ahead of Mike right now? Ozzy?
I would say Ozzy and...
The thing about Mike is we don't know... Can he swim?
Right. We don't know that.
And that's probably the strongest part of Ozzy's game.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a real argument that Ozzy is...
Ozzy's number one.
I think Ozzy's the guy.
Mount Rushmore of challenge performers.
Right.
Okay. Give it to me. It's Ozzy.
It's Ozzy. Is it that group? I mean, is it Ozzy? Is it Colby version one? is it Tom? Is it Terry? Is it Mike?
Mm.
Are Ozzie there people Tom that you would put on there?
I got to have a woman up there. I got to have put Kelly in there.
Put Kelly in there.
Okay. Got to have a woman. And Parvati, I wouldn't complain either. Sure. If you had her in there.
Kim Sprodlin.
Kim, how many does Kim have?
She has a bunch.
She has
a
bunch.
I don't have the number off the top of my head.
Yeah. Is there anybody else that we're not thinking of? These great challenge competitors?
Of course there is. I think what the point that I'm driving at, though, is... I feel like we're talking about a guy who is just really an all-timer, so it's unusual circumstances. But that being said, the very next season that we're going to be talking about has an all-timer in Terry, has somebody who could have been an all-timer in Joe, has some really terrific challenge competitors, has Wigglesworth out there. So could we be seeing that idea of the Holloway effect in effect? Potentially, but that's a lot of different people that you're going to have to target on that level. When we get to the post-merge, if some of those people are still in play, that's going to be one of the most competitive post-merge games ever, challenge-wise, at least, assuming, some of these formerly dominant players don't pull a Heroes Villains Colby.
Okay. Are you ready for the next question here, Josh?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Here is a question, comes from our good friend, Morgan.
Hi, Rob. This is Morgan Stradling. One interesting thing I saw in this season was how Mike's character and journey ultimately followed the hero's journey, which we see many times in literature, movies, and film. This starts off with everything going great for the hero of our story, very much like how Blue Collar at the beginning of the season was winning basically everything. Mike was the head of his alliance. But then things start to unravel, and that's happened with Mike losing one of his greatest allies, Kelly. Ultimately, they fall into this abyss, the lowest of low, and that is Mike at the auction when he became public enemy number one and everyone turned their back on him. So the hero has to then climb out of this many times through supernatural aid. And I see that supernatural aid being the immunities that he won and the hidden immunity idol that he found and ultimately played to save his life. So then after all of this, the hero is able to come out the victor. And that's what happened. Go, Mike. You're awesome. Hooray. So what do you think about this? Fan fiction?
What do you think, Rob?
All right. So, Josh, you and I, back when, was it the start? It might have been the 7 things you need to know about this season.
Yeah.
You and I talked about Survivor the movie.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Is the Mike Holloway story the plot? Is Mike the main character in Survivor the movie?
Absolutely.
Wow!
If Worlds Apart, the movie?
No, sure. Survivor, the movie.
Of Survivor, the movie. I mean, there's a lot of contenders for that. You know, he'd be a great main character. I would watch that movie.
Yeah. All right. What is the trailer for Survivor, the movie? In a world with no collars
and white collars and blue collars.
In a world where the dancing is no longer happy.
Where people only do the sad dance, except for one man.
In a world where everybody talks like this.
Or sometimes like this, and then sometimes like this.
Where everybody wants you out. What do you think? Could this be it?
I would watch it. I would pay money to sit in that theater. It'd be fun.
Then, Jeff, I'm gonna buy this letter. Psych, no, I'm not.
I can't do it. It's wrong. I can't do it.
That's 2 votes for Dan.
Dan still got 2 votes. Mom!
Wow.
It's good. I like it. Write the script.
All right. That would be good.
I would watch it.
Yeah. What's the name of it? Is it Survivor the movie?
Yeah.
Okay. The Mike Holloway story?
Mike Holloway story. Coming to Lifetime.
I mean, because basically, if you were going to plot the screenplay of it, I'm no Cochran.
Yeah.
So basically, like, the first act is what? Up until, is it like when... What's the first act? What's the first act break?
First act is it's probably going to end on the cliffhanger, right? Of him making that play at the auction.
So the whole second act.
It's going to be a two act show.
Okay,
two act show.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good for Mike.
Great for Mike. No, I mean,
survivor the movie.
I mean, it really was a ridiculous hero story for Mike in terms of the edit, though.
Yeah. Great job.
Very cinematic when you look at the full picture.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take a question from our good friend, Antonio.
Antonio, hey!
All right, let's check in with Antonio.
Hey, Rob and Josh, it's Antonio from Melbourne, Kentucky. Hi, guys.
So formal.
So last night on Know It Alls, Rob, you and Tyson got the question, what were Mike's big moves in the game? And you talked about voting out Joe. And you talked about how Mike pointed to the non-move or move at the auction as a big move. But what I don't think you gave enough credit to was Mike's idol bluff the night that Shireen went home. I think that was one of the best moves with an idol that we've seen in the history of the game. I think it exposed the cracks within the Alliance of Six, such that when Mike won immunity next week, he was able to play and work with one side against the other and put Tyler on blast and get him out of the game, which I think was a very key element to Mike continuing to win immunities throughout and being able to go to the end. I think the paranoia that Mike created with that vote that night and in the moment by busting it out at tribal council and not any time sooner, I think all of that was really key to Mike being able to work the Alliance of Six against each other as he continued to win immunity. No, without winning immunity, I don't think he wins the game. However, when he won immunity, he was able to do a lot of the time what he wanted, and it was because he was the one who was creating a lot of the waves. Sure, some of the time they thought he was crazy, but a lot of the times he wasn't, and he got what he wanted. So I think that's a big move that shouldn't be overlooked. What do you guys think? You guys have been doing the evolution of strategy. Has there ever been a more effective idol bluff like that or some kind of big moment with an idol like that that isn't a pure idol play? Thanks, guys.
What's your take on that, Rob?
Well, I agree with everything Antonio is saying, the reason behind it, but I think I disagree with the point of that what Mike did that night ultimately changed anything.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's any evidence that it did. Unless you want to argue that Mike doesn't get the jury votes if he didn't do what he did and save Shireen or put on this big display. And maybe he did. But ultimately, in terms of the game, nothing changed. If he didn't do that, I mean, he could have just, if he just sat there that night with the idol in his pocket and said, yeah, I'm sorry, Shireen, and she went home, does Mike not go on to win the game?
Right. I think that you talked about this with David Bloomberg a few weeks back of what if Mike had actually physically given her the hidden immunity idol. I think that makes this move potentially legendary. I think that might be the missing ingredient that makes this move effective. I think Shireen could have still been in the game if he had done that.
But Shireen being in the game maybe complicates things for Mike. But let's just say hypothetically, he just kept it in his pocket the whole night.
Doesn't even play.
Didn't take it out. Didn't say he's going to hey, I've got this idol for Shireen.
Right.
Doesn't do any of those things. That night, Shireen goes home and Mike sits there, plays the idol next time, still goes on to win all the same challenges.
Right. I mean, it's not like showing that Dan gets two votes didn't actually do anything for Dan.
Right.
Like, Dan got over that quickly.
It's not like Dan said after, like, oh, my God.
Right.
You were right, Mike.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
He could be a bigger man about this. I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go, Josh. I have to go with a bigger man.
It's our word. I can use this. We're bigger guys, Dan.
But nothing changed.
Yeah. I think one of the things.
So Mike's move was great. But it ultimately doesn't move the needle with this group.
It's style points. And I think style points are huge for Mike Holloway, especially when he is sitting up against someone like Carolyn, who has a great resume as a challenge competitor, won immunities. But strategically, in terms of being strategically successful, is probably the most strategically successful person on that panel, on the final three. And I think that Mike's style points go a long way. The fact that he makes that move, that Survivor Russian roulette move. I think the fact that he he puts Carolyn and Rodney up against each other in the fire making challenge. Did he really have to do that? I think that that puts on a huge show for the jury. I think it shows, you know, it embarrasses them both. It makes them, you know, both look a little bit, you know, pathetic in front of the jury because they can't get a fire going in an hour. And I think that those kinds of style points, like that's like the Vlachos type of thing is, you know, the bag of tricks. I think that Mike had a bag of tricks. And I think rather than it being that one move that Antonio was bringing up being Mike's best move, I think it's a collection of items from the bag of tricks that he is pulling out that are, you know, going to pile up and result in people looking at this guy's challenge resume and all of the things that he was trying to do. And it's going to be really difficult not to reward that guy with $1 million.
Okay. Let's go ahead and try this one. And let's talk about Dan a little bit.
Okay.
Since we brought him up.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So let me take this question. This is from Steve in Los Angeles.
Hey, Rob. It's Steve in Los Angeles. Dan could not be more wrong when he said that Mike didn't think about any of the jury members when he put them up there. He had a bond with most of the white collars after the merge, including Jen, Haley, Shireen, and even Joe. So what is Dan talking about? You know, he had relationships with his blue collar guys as well before he made that brain fart of an auction move.
Are you trying to tell me that Dan is wrong about something?
What? How dare you?
Dan is wrong again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what Dan, like, you sent people to the jury and you didn't care. Like, what is this supposed to do?
Look, you know, not to dogpile on the guy any further, but I do think one of the big takeaways from the huge segment that we spent with Dan and Jeff during the reunion really does highlight that Dan's perception of things might be off from reality.
Might be.
Might be.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Perhaps.
Is.
Okay. All right. You want to dive into some of the stuff from the segment with Dan and Will?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Let's take a question from our friend of the show, Shandy, who's also one of Dan's favorite callers into the podcast.
Of course.
She wants to talk about some of the sexism issues that Jeff raised on the show. Not only did Jeff raise them on the show, he also like teased them in the first minute of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was ready to talk
like
about
giving
it.
Them a heads up. Like, I hope you prepared something.
Yeah. I hope everybody's ready. Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Hey, Rob. It's Shandy Lompelet, and I had a couple of questions about the sexism talk at the reunion. First of all, I was somewhat pleasantly surprised by Dan's apology, especially after how he came off in the exit press. However, I still don't think he really gets it, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Second, I appreciated the fact that Jeff didn't back down with Dan, but the Your Mama joke was not actually a huge deal, so I have to wonder if Jeff really gets it, too. Will was an obvious disaster, and as for Rodney, why mention that he was part of the problem if instead of asking him a question, you're going to just give him a birthday cake? Finally, with the exception of Shireen, why were none of the women asked how they felt about the way that they were talked to? It seemed like a very one-sided conversation. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think none of the women were talked to because Dan talked so long and killed a lot of the airtime.
Okay, let's just touch on this whole thing with Dan. And he was upset about this last night.
I'm
talking to him. And, you know, a couple people from the cast were also upset about this, that they felt like that the show really went out of their way to, you know, go after Dan, and he was hurt, or that they were hurt by what he said. He said a lot of interviews, but it's like the show did me dirty.
Yeah.
They put things in my mouth in the editing, and, you know, it really became a lot about that last night.
Yeah. I think, you know, the reason for the focus on the whole your mother's a whore thing, I think that was really brought up because they had that footage and they were able to use that to illustrate the point of Dan, maybe you're not remembering things right. So I think that's the shoe that they're trying to drop.
They need to show that clip. Could they have just said, like, could Jeff say, you know, Dan, I watched the clip.
Yeah, they need to show it.
You know what? I'm going to put it on YouTube. I'll tweet out a link to it.
They need to show it because
it was so long.
It was long. It was long, but it changes, you know, it changes Dan. It changes Dan's position on the thing. He says, you're right. I must have misremembered because clearly we're watching that right now. Mm. So I think, you know, you might not get that reaction out of Dan if you just put that online.
Yeah. So that's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. No, it's listen, it's a really complicated thing. It was a huge talking point throughout the season among fans online. And it's, you know, it's a conversation that's very relevant and resonant right now. And it's a shame for the people involved with the season who really just want to celebrate their season, want to talk about their season. But, you know, it's a conversation that deserves its due diligence. And, you know, maybe it was a little long and it would have been nice to talk about some of this other stuff. But I would have rather them talk about it for a long time than not to talk about it at all.
Okay. Let's take a few more questions. This is one from Jake.
Hey, Rob and Josh. I just wanted to know, I'm not the type of person to complain about Survivor seasons, but I am curious just what you guys thought Jeff Probst exactly saw in this season. He obviously hyped it up quite a bit, and I think that, you know, the Survivor fan community can agree this was not one of Survivor's better seasons. So I just wanted to know, do you think he knew this going in and just wanted to maybe hype it up knowing that an all-star season was coming next? Or did he actually see something in this? Thanks, guys.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, he does come into this saying, my favorite cast ever, comments like that, you're going to love the winner. And that doesn't seem to be necessarily in line with a lot.
I think we do love the winner.
Thinking we love the winner. Love the winner. I think that Worlds Apart works better as a binge. It's a tough season weekly. When you know that Mike is going to be the winner and you can see that story playing through, and it really is kind of like Survivor the movie. It's like the Western hero, you know. He's like the lone gunslinger that's going up against all of these clowns. And he, you know, it's a really compelling story when you know the full arc. But when you don't know the full arc yet and people are being shown to be so nasty, it is tough to watch.
I think the miscalculation from Jeff was, I don't think he knew about how the, you know, Will and Shireen stuff was going to be perceived.
Sure.
And I don't think he knew about, maybe he, you know, he wasn't there at camp with the ugly incident. You know, he knows that there was fighting. He was there at tribal council. He saw it, but that fighting was, I'm sure in his mind, okay, this is good for the show. This is good for the show. He's not seeing all these Dan confessionals. He's not seeing all this stuff that's going to, you know, make people not love this season. He knows that they have Rodney. Rodney's going to get to the final four. He's going to, you know, be talking about his birthday and all this stuff.
His damn birthday.
You have Mike, who's like this really likable guy who, you know, Jeff loves his alpha males. He's going to go on a huge run and win 5 out of 6 of the last challenges and go up against these people and come away the winner. And I'm sure in Jeff's mind, on paper, boy, this has everything, all the elements of a really top, tip-top toes season.
Tip-top toes. Yeah, but I don't know that everybody wanted to go tip-top toes with this season.
Yeah.
But I listen, my tradition has been we get up to the finale and I watch the season again.
Oh, wow.
So I did that with San Juan del Sur last year as I was flying out here from New York. I watched the entire thing up until the finale. I did the same with Worlds Apart on my way out here this time. And it plays better for me knowing the outcome. And I was assuming Mike was going to win. So I'm rewatching Worlds Apart with the assumption.
And the prophecy.
And the prophecy.
The prophecy that the winner of this tribe is on this map.
Yeah, so it does play better when you have a fuller picture of where it's going to go. But just weekly, it was really difficult. And I think that you're probably right. I can picture you know, Jeff not being able to predict that the perception of the big blowout between Will and Shireen and the comments that Dan made were going to be really latched onto as hard as they were.
Now, the whole thing with the, you know, the prophecy that Lindsay had that the winner of this game is right here on this mat. She ends up saying it twice. Is it unfair that Steven and I made that bet? Was that a spoiler?
No, it just means that Steven is a more perceptive Survivor viewer than you are.
Yeah. I didn't get a chance to play it last night, but after this bet, I actually have a song about this.
Oh, really?
Yes, that this is a song I recorded with Jim Rice last night about Steven, and Jim Rice feels the same way.
Steven, you screwed Rob over. Out of being the knowingest know-it-all. When Rob sees Steven in a dark alley.
Well, really, I don't think either of them are kicking anybody's ass.
Yeah. What'd you think of that?
Jim Rice.
No, that's not really Jim Rice. That is from courtesy of Tim Stinks.
Sounds like Jim Rice. It's a good impression.
Tim's actually a Jim Rice impersonator.
Oh, is that right?
That's
full time?
Yeah, he does that. He does it full time. He goes to
Steven, you screwed Rob over.
Ironically, it was Steven screwed Jim Rice over, I think.
Yeah, Steven screwed me over.
Yeah, poor Jim Rice.
No, Steven, listen, great night for Steven. Turned out to Steven Nice, though. You know, knowing his know-it-all, getting to leave know-it-alls for a little while on a high note, gets to go and play Survivor. Great night for Steven Fishback.
Steven, you screwed me over.
He really did. Blindside.
Yeah.
I think that bodes well for his Survivor game.
Yeah. All right. Actually, you know, Tim was very interested in this bet. This was actually another song that he recorded about this. He originally was the same person that recorded the Rob is the Best Know-It-All.
Oh, awesome.
And so this is the third song he's recorded about me and Steven's bets.
Well, Rob, you can't always be the knowingest know-it-all. But if you voted sometimes, well, you might find you get to watch Steven get kicked off of Survivor. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, it really is going to be a blast when he gets voted out. It's going to be the best. Do you think it's going to be like a really embarrassing exit for Steven?
Yeah, well, give me paint the picture.
Is he going to get like a Max Dawson, Drew Christie episode?
Yeah, I think he's like throwing a challenge and trying to pull something off and then
spills out the rice.
Well, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly.
Peas in the beans. Gets a massage from Probst.
Yeah, I feel like that would be it's Survivor. We hope he wins. We'll see what happens. But, you know,
if he loses, it'll be great.
Yeah. If you're going to go out with a bang.
Oh,
that's
God.
What we're hoping for.
Oh, Steven.
Yeah. You know, I had three things that I wanted to accomplish. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to be memorable and win the game.
Yeah. One or two out of three ain't bad.
All right. Let's take this is a question that Josh really wanted to make sure we touched on wrap up.
I don't think that's true.
Hey, Rob, this is Jared. So I noticed Haley's eye during final tribal council was really red. And then I noticed during Rodney's Ponderosa video that Haley's eye was definitely red because it did like a close up of her face. And it freaked me out. What is up with that, Rob? Why is her eye so red? Okay, bye.
It's a fantastic question.
Good question. Why is Haley's eye so red?
Yeah, I don't think it's for the Jim Rice reasons. I think that Haley has like a really bloodshot eye in the Rodney Ponderosa video. I didn't notice it in the episode, but she has like a red ring around her eye. Completely unexplained. Don't know why. It's a great question. It looks like what happens like after like a long night of drinking and some vomiting occurs and like you've strained your eye.
Oh no.
Like I feel like that's happened to me before. So I wonder if that's what happened. I'm just, you know, shooting the breeze here. But it's very strange. And if you haven't sought out the Ponderosa video yet, you should take a look and see Haley's nightmare eye.
I'm taking a look at Rodney's Ponderosa video. And then he's coming back to Ponderosa.
Yeah.
Sierra is it after this? Then he's like shaving.
Yeah.
Sure. She does it. Her eye looks bloodshot, but it's not like
there's like a red ring of death around her eye.
No, I think you're making it sound worse than it is. I have to say,
I have an eye phobia, Rob. No joke. Eyes freak me out.
I'm watching this with the sound off, though. Everybody does look pretty wasted, and this Ponderosa video. Listen,
it's the dirty 30.
The dirty 30. They were getting
thirsty. 30.
They were getting thirsty.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, just one other thing on that. I had to look up Sierra's last name, which I hadn't said on the show.
Uh-huh.
And I did a Google search for Sierra. And there are some good autocomplete suggestions for Sierra. So, okay, Sierra. I'm typing in Sierra Survivor. So the top thing is Sierra Survivor And then underneath Sierra Survivor eyebrows.
Eyebrows.
That is a...
People are very into the eyebrow thing. I actually don't see it.
But isn't that crazy? That's an autocomplete on Google.
A lot of people are wondering about it.
And I'm going to click I'm feeling lucky. And then, you ever do that on Google?
Not often. I don't really get the point.
I'm feeling lucky. I actually go to a thread on Survivor Sucks. The thread is entitled Sierra is absolutely gorgeous. Okay. And then I'm sure that there's some eyebrow talk there. Okay. All right. You want to just a couple of second chance voicemails?
I would love to talk second chance.
Okay. Because we know we are going to be talking about it all summer long. And so let's go ahead and bring this in. There's a question from Anna.
Hey, Rob. This is Anna from Seattle. In your projection podcast with Kirk Clark, you guys talked a lot about CBS's claim that 10 million votes had been cast and what the ratio of votes between casual TV viewers and internet fans would be. Now that we know the results of the vote, what do you think? Is 10 million votes plausible? How many votes do you think casual fans cast? Love to hear your thoughts. Can't wait for the Evolution of Strategy Volume 2. Thanks.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Okay. So we talked about this idea of the specter of 10 million ballots cast on this on Tuesday night with Kurt. And we went through this and what it could mean. And I talked about a potential red wedding of voting where none of the classic players get it. Maybe Kelly Wigglesworth, and that's it. And then you're going to get like basically all the people that are the most recent people.
Right.
And that's not what happened. It looks like we got a lot of people that were probably not top of mind for the casual viewer.
You would think.
In Stephen Fishback, in PG, there's a couple others. What do you think happened here?
It seems like the internet's cast.
Right.
This seems like the internet's cast.
We didn't get Shane, and we didn't get T-Bird, who we had at third place, respectively, in our exit polling.
Right. You know, but those are really, in my book, those are the only two shocks. And like, I wouldn't call T-Bird a shock as much as a disappointment. Mm-hmm. Shane, I consider a shock. That's it. That's really it. You know, it's for me, based on what I'd been seeing, what I'd been hearing, the cast that we ended up with is pretty close to what the internet wanted.
I thought it was very interesting that there was no mention in the live show, unless I missed it.
10 million vote, 10 million ballots.
Like, Jeff didn't come out and be like, boy, we did Survivor Second Chance. We were blown away. 11 million ballots were cast here. But people, like, you would think
if it was an
astronomical number, Wouldn't they shine a light on that?
You would think so. You would think so. I think 10 million sounds very high. It sounded really high at the time. And I think, you know, with the cast that we now know we have, that doesn't look like 10 million ballots. That looks like the ballots of really passionate Survivor fans to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it was that 10 million thing. I just think that the show would have, you know, have said, and again, that never came from, you know, Jeff.
Yeah.
He retweeted Gordon Holmes. But you know, that's not exactly the same as saying this is how many ballots we got.
Yeah.
They never came out and said, maybe they will.
Maybe they will.
Maybe they will as part of like the pregame press for Survivor Second Chance and stuff like that. But I don't know. I just don't see how, If it's the internet or if it's the casual viewing audience, I'm not sure how PG is, and even Steven. I was worried about Steven too. Yeah. The middle season people, do they really remember Terry? Do they really remember Andrew?
Kimmy Kappenberg?
Kimmy, Jeff?
Yeah. I think that was the moment for me where I was really on the edge of my seat the whole time. But the moment for me where I kind of figured, I think this is going to work out.
Yeah.
Was when both Jeff and Kimmy
both got on. Right.
You know, that's the moment where it's like, oh man, we're actually going to have old schoolers on this season.
Right. When he said both of them, I think you're right. But then when he said no to T-Bird, that was the worst one because that was the first person he said no to like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was brutal. What have you talked about this yet? How do you feel about the cast overall?
No, it's good. I mean, I think overall, other than the two people that we're talking about,
Did we get this right?
I think that we got it. I think
like 98%.
I think, well, what's like, I'm trying to think if there's anybody, Wu is the one person that I'm not in love with on the, and he's a nice guy.
Happy boy,
he's
though. I love Wu.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah,
Wu. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I have anything against Wu.
I just listen to this. It's okay.
Yeah, and
even if he was here, he wouldn't be right. listening.
That's right. I just feel like, you know, I don't get what the appeal is, because to me, I already have Keith Nail in this cast.
Right.
I feel like,
are you a Nail Mail now?
I see the appeal. I'm not going to say it.
You're not a Nail Mail.
I see the appeal of Keith Nail, especially you need to have the older guy who, and we have a couple of older guys, but we don't have the lovable older guy, Terry, Andrew.
They're intense.
They're the intense older guy, but we need the lovable older guy. And Keith is filling that role.
Right.
But to me, I just feel like, you know, I don't know.
Listen,
I have a Wu voicemail. Let me play this.
Let's play it.
Let's play this. And then let's talk Wu.
Hey, Rob and Josh, this is Harry in Atlanta, Georgia. I had a question about second chances and the butterfly effect that Wu seems to have. I was upset that he made it on, but in thinking more about it, it all goes back to the decision he made who to take to Final Tribal. If he had taken Cass, either Wu or Cass would not have been on the show this coming season. And more importantly, and what I would like to get you guys' take on, is what the show would be like season 31 if Tony was eligible to get a second chance. Thanks. Bye.
So now I'm mad at Wu. Now I'm mad at Wu that he didn't take Cass to the final two in Kageon. He would have beat Cass, potentially. Does that seem right?
Probably.
Okay, so let's say Wu beats Cass in the final two. Now, instead of Wu on this season, Tony is on this season. Pregnant pause.
Yep.
And Cass, Tony, Spencer, Tasha.
I know. But
Survivor, Worlds Apart, this fall.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I love Tony as a winner so much that I can't be mad about that.
You screwed us over.
You can't actually be mad at that. Look, it'd be cool. It would be great to see Tony in this mix of people, but you know, current Survivor history is a very different looking animal if Wu is a winner, and Tony is not.
I needed this.
Wu.
Wu.
All right. So what are we going to? We're going to go back in time.
We're going to tell Wu to kill Tony and bring Cass.
We need Tony alive.
Zombie Tony.
We need Tony alive. Okay. So, all right, here's the plot. Okay. It's
Tonys have a great tendency of coming back. From
all right.
The
so it's Survivor the movie. Okay. Whoa. Are you telling me
that I'm in a movie?
That you guys are in a movie right now?
Whoa. Craft Services?
Whoa.
These ribs are immaculate.
Wu, you need to take Cass to the final two. The final two what? Wu, you have to listen to us. The future of Survivor is depending on this. Hold on. Are there ribs?
It's all you can eat.
What
do you have any idea how many ribs $1 million can buy?
Whoa.
Will they be immaculate?
Yes, all in your mouth. Let's go. What do you think?
Do we fight for it?
Tony comes back. He wins. Kim Sprodlin edit.
Doesn't matter. Like, just the fact that Cass, Spencer, and Tasha are on the same season again, that's good enough for me. That's terrific. That's going to be so disastrous.
Mm.
It's going to be great. Tony, Kageon is not the season it is if Tony doesn't win. So it's
Tony.
I'm not changing anything.
Tony and Steven on one tribe.
Would be great. Now you're talking.
All right.
Now you're talking.
Hop it. Get it. Tell Wu, we need this. This summer, Rob and Josh are going back into Kageon. The revolution of strategy.
Wow. Is that volume 4?
That's where we go back and change things.
Yeah, we go back and re-record. We like George Lucas, the evolution of strategy.
So, yeah, like a Woo shot first. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's it. I'm so mad at Woo today.
but seriously, you know, I'm not gonna argue that if the choice is you can take Woo out and you can put Shane in, of course.
Right.
Obviously.
And you could take Woo out and put Tony in. An angry Tony who has been stewing for a year on getting voted out by Woo.
You like that over Shane? You would have angry Tony before Shane?
Why can't I have both? Who else can I get rid of?
Yeah.
Who else can I get rid of? Can I kick somebody else to the curb?
So you really don't think that Woo is going to provide anything to this season?
I think there'll be a couple of laughs, but I just think in a 20-person cast, he's going to get lost. He's going to be there and he's going to be around for a while. He's going to go far also.
But that could be great. I think that people like Keith and people like Woo are.
Now, if he shows up as Weasel Woo.
As Weasel Woo. Well, first
if
off,
he's Weasel Woo.
I voted for Woo every day.
It's your fault.
Because I want to get to.
I'm texting Shane Powers right now.
Don't do it. Stop. Stop. Put it
Shane.
Down. Yeah, he actually is. Put that down. Put it down. Thank you.
Josh Wiggler voted every day.
No, I voted for Shane too.
Okay.
I didn't vote for Savage. but I voted for Woo because I want Woo to get on the exit press and I want us all to ask him for the true Weasel Woo story.
That's it?
That's the reason.
We could have called him.
He doesn't have a phone.
He has a phone.
I don't know the number. But I think people like Woo and Keith are great to have on this cast because not only for comic relief, but also because they're bombs. You know, they can blow up aspects of the game because they don't know the game very well. And I think that that's really fun. And we have a cast that consists of very strong players for a variety of reasons. You know, somebody tweeted this at me earlier. I don't remember who, and I don't have the tweet in front of me, but like we've got bruisers. We've got smart people. You know, we've got tons of different types of survivor players. And I think there is a lot to be said for having a couple of lovable dummies around who might muck things up and might make such a ridiculous decision as to bring a Tony Vlachos to the final two. And I love that. And I'm really excited personally to see Woo out there. If you take Woo out and you put Shane or angry Tony in, I'm probably happier.
Yeah. In a vacuum, Woo is fine.
Yeah.
But I was fine with Woo once.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't like, if you go back and listen to the podcast, I wasn't like, oh my God, when are they going to vote off Woo?
Sure. Of course.
But it's like, you know, if we were driving and it's like, you could have Chipotle. Okay. I like Chipotle. Or we could go to like, we could have this amazing restaurant. Like, right. Well, no offense.
Chipotle's like, fine.
Chipotle is good.
Yeah.
It's not bad. I'd rather have Chipotle than some other crap that you would give me, but there were better options out there.
There were good options. There were good options.
There were good options.
Anyway, I voted for Woo every day, so I'm happy.
You had one job, Josh.
But I voted for you too, Shane. Don't hurt me. Don't come to my shitty apartment and clip me.
You are getting clipped.
No.
Okay. All right, let's just take one last question about this. And this is from Jared. And Jared has a new theory about something that we've been wondering about for a couple of weeks.
Hello, Rob. This is Jared. So I remember with your voicemails with Tyson, you got that really weird voicemail from that like angry guy. I really think that was Dan. Like it sounded a lot like him. And it was shortly after you did some of those podcasts and he seemed really bitter with you during his interview. So what do you think about that? Okay, bye.
You guys, the punch drunk thing, what's the matter with you people? Whatever.
It sounds more like Randy.
You don't think that it could be
Randy doing a Dan? Or Dan doing a Randy? Or Rodney doing a Randy?
Oh, you think it was Rodney doing an impression of Randy?
It sounds like it.
Oh, my God.
Can we hear it again?
Okay. You tell me. I'm not convinced yet.
You guys, the punch drunk thing, what's the matter with you people? Whatever.
It sounds like my Randy impression.
Was it you?
It was me. It was me, Rob. I'm the one who called you. I left you a voicemail. I'll buy you a beer.
Whatever.
Whatever.
All right, so this is a mystery.
That's a mystery of Laura.
That's going to remain That's going to remain unsolved.
I hope it's answered in Survivor the Movie, unless unless Damon Lindelof is writing it. We're not getting any answers.
No, in the Survivor movie written by Damon Lindelof, do things happen like the opposite of how they happen actually? Like, like Kelly gives Sue Hawk the snakes and rats speech?
Right, exactly.
Wow.
That's an alternate universe.
That's an alternate
sideways survivor.
Sideways survivor. Okay. All right. Let's just take a couple of quick text questions, and then we'll get into some social media. Zach Vossler wants to know, in hindsight, do you think that the no collars in Shireen ruined everyone else's chances of winning the game by voting out Kelly instead of Mike when Jen used the hidden immunity idol? Funny to think about it now, but Final 12 was the last tribal council where he was vulnerable.
Wow. Is that right?
Well, when did he find the idol? Did he find it? Was that at Final 11 when he found the idol?
Yeah, he finds it next.
Yeah. You know, it was a good point that was brought up by Rodney in my exit interview with him, where he talked about how Tyler was the one that told Mike where to find the idol.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Tyler choking in that scene of, like, you know, Tyler and Joe were looking for the idol, and then Mike came over like, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh,
let me tell you everything.
Yeah.
There's an immunity idol. I have the clues. I'm telling them, so you know. Pure panic.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was rewatching Worlds Apart the other day, and I got to the Kelly episode, I really was wondering, like, why did they vote out Kelly? It was really out of spite. You know, it was because she had flipped back to blue collar, and so they just did that purely out of spite on Kelly. That's the reason they target Kelly. If they had blasted Mike out of the game right there, the season would suck. It would be a bad season. Yeah, I mean,
See, that's in the revolution of strategy. That's like the bad people that are trying to ruin Survivor.
They're trying to go back in time.
They're going to go back in time, and they're going to tell Jen and Hale, like, they're like, put the votes on Mike.
Yeah, but Jen wouldn't do it because then she wouldn't get voted out two episodes later.
Yeah, she's like,
Just shut up, man.
I got this.
No, it's really kind of amazing. It's really amazing what this season would have looked like if they had not blasted Kelly, if they'd gone after Mike or even Tyler.
Yeah, what do you think of this idea? This is like a Quantum Leap Survivor,
yeah,
where there are bad guys that are going back through history and changing things to make them, like, people are going back and, like, voting for Russell in Samoa, and like they're just trying to change Survivor history.
Who's responsible? Who's doing this? Rocket scientist John Fincher.
Why would he do that?
Because he built the time machine.
He built the time.
Or it's his technology, and someone is abusing it.
Look,
don't go back in time. You're an idiot.
Yeah. If somebody goes back in time and they're playing with things, then you're an idiot.
History is gonna change. Yeah. And you might be wiped out of existence.
And I gotta sleep in, so I can't do it.
Right.
And you guys gotta go back. Okay. So me and you have to fix the timeline.
Okay. You've right. convinced me. I'm in.
Let's go.
I'm in.
Okay. This is a question from Kels B. Red, who wants to know, are you surprised that Tyler didn't vote for Carolyn?
A little bit.
That was surprising, wasn't it?
A little bit. I'm really surprised that Carolyn only got one vote. Didn't even get Shireen's after all that.
Were you surprised that Dan voted for Mike?
No. I think he wanted it for the redemption story.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that would have been, it's a good narrative for him had other things not played out the way that they played out. I think for the story he was thinking about in his head, I think it was the right ending for him to vote for Mike.
Let me ask you a question from Brian Gold, Josh.
Sure.
What's the postmortem on Rodney? He was definitely the comedic star of the season, and even though he's not an amazing player, you have to think that he'll be back again after how much comedy he brought. All right, let's talk Rodney.
Yeah. I'm surprised he's not on Second Chance, why he wasn't on the ballot. I didn't get a chance to ask him that.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Woo or Rodney?
Woo or Rodney? Woo. Give me Woo.
You still want Woo over Rodney?
Yeah, I love Woo.
What does...
Because Rodney's good at the game. Rodney's good at the game. You know, I like Woo because he's not. I like having a bomb.
You don't want to see Rodney go tip-top toes with Stephen Fishback?
You've convinced me again.
You better relax, bro.
No, listen, Rodney will come back, right? Rodney's going to come back in a future season. And I think that he will once again be underestimated.
Yes.
Because I think you really, it's difficult to appreciate the fact that Rodney's actually decent at this. He's actually pretty good. He comes off a certain way to us, the viewers. But in terms of, you know, talking to the people who were out there and hearing what they have to say, these people really loved and respected Rodney. Rodney will come back. I'm fairly confident about that. And I think he could do really well again.
Yeah. I think that one of the surprises for me after going through this process in the last 24 hours is that I think a lot of us thought Carolyn was the threat to Mike.
Yeah.
It was Rodney.
It was Rodney.
Rodney was the bigger threat. And then if you look at it under the context of, we called this, you know, Goat Island all season. It's like, okay, you got to get to the end with, you know, Dan and Will, or Dan and Rodney, right, or Will and Rodney.
Right.
Rodney wasn't the goat that we thought he was during the season.
No, he was the goat in the sense of greatest of all time.
Yeah. And the whole thing with the fire making challenge, like, I feel like Mike framed it wrong. Like, I feel like he was sort of like, you know, Carolyn's been with me the whole time, and she deserves it more than Hot Rod.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Like, I think that's where people are like, well, why are you doing this? Like, if he would have said like that, I know it sounds crazy, Rodney is going to get more jury votes than Carolyn is. He's a bigger jury threat. So that's why. And if I put Carolyn on the jury, then, or if I send her to at least give her a shot at a fire making challenge, then I probably got her jury vote too.
In terms of what he's telling us.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought he did a bad job in explaining what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I think we were all just watching like, what is he doing? Is he about to pull a Colby?
The moral argument. Yeah. Well, he did, but it was a successful Colby.
Successful Colby.
Yeah.
Now, what do you call that?
A successful Colby.
Successful Colby.
Mark, full tilt.
Mark Paris wants to know, Rob, did you broker a peace treaty between Jim Rice and Mike at the after party?
Did you?
Yeah, that I had both of them. There's a picture of the three of us together.
Was the beef legit?
I mean, I think it was, because I think it started like around the time that Jim Rice was on the podcast. So, like, there, like, Mike said something to Jim Rice, I think around the time that Jim Rice was on the podcast. And Jim Rice was, he was yelling at Mike last night, like, F you, Mike. Uh-huh. And for Mike, I think he knew he wasn't going to go back on. So, you know, for him, you know, it was like I said to Jim, like, Jim, that was actually a really smart idea, because Mike was going to win. And then he wouldn't even have been out there to vote you out first. And he's like, oh, I didn't even think of that.
He's just giving you free promotion.
Right. But for Mike, that he was able to, like, he knew he wasn't going to go back out there, but he could, like, put the target on Jim Rice.
Right. Right. Wow.
Like, he sort of, like, was able to, like, if he wanted to, he could have really, like, you know, bloodied a couple people up for the Dirty 30.
But are they okay now?
Yeah, I think it's fine.
It's okay. Smooth.
I think everybody in the bitter 12 or disappointed dozen or whatever, the left out 11, I think everybody, they're all fine with each other.
Okay.
I don't think there's anybody from that group. I think that group is going to end up a tighter knit group, because yeah, there are only 11 people that can relate to what they went through.
I think I overheard Jim saying that his plan was to take Natalie and Stephanie to the final three.
Well, that stuff is going to start to come out.
Yeah.
Oh, drip.
Can't
drip,
wait.
Drip.
Cannot wait. It's going to be a fun summer.
Yeah. And I actually got into a debate with Jim Rice of who had the better chance to win the game, Natalie or Stephanie, in front of them. They were there.
So, and you're pulling like the Russell when he's talking to Boston.
You'd
Rob.
Be surprised how well that strategy worked.
Sandra and Courtney. Unbelievable, yeah. Rob.
But it was the opposite of that. Who's going to win?
Right.
And I said, Natalie. Natalie is the winner.
You've been saying
two.
That.
Yes. And Jim Rice says, no, it's Stephanie.
And what did Natalie and Stephanie have to say?
And I said that with her mouth, she's going to win the game.
Wow. You said that?
Yeah. I said, who would vote out Natalie?
Yeah.
She's so nice.
It's a bold conversation to have right in front of them. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think either of them were.
Who wins now that Natalie Tenorelli is out of the running? Who's going to win Survivor Second Chance?
Monica.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Monica.
Write it down.
Lock it in.
Write it down.
Monica Padilla.
Yeah.
I like that.
A lot of people said that my interview with Monica really did help. They were persuaded to vote for Monica after I talked to her.
Well, Monica apparently has a talent for that in terms of persuading a jury of her peers.
Yes. Yeah, I thought she was good. I was so, you know, from when we get to that in Evolution of Strategy, I was so fired up about Samoa, and you know, I had really had forgotten about her exit in Samoa, and I was really fired up about it.
It's a great episode, and it's a great look for her.
Yeah,
on her
and it's a double episode.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It'll also be interesting to see if Monica Padilla is on the jury again.
Yeah,
and then ends up like getting people to not vote for somebody. This sort of like a bitter jury type thing that happens. Like, I'm not saying the Samoa jury is bitter. I'm just saying like that there's like a lot of fallout about the jury. That'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think the homework assignment I'd give to anybody who's interested is if you're not going to do Evolution of Strategy, which you should do, of course, but if you're not, at the very least this summer, go back, watch Samoa, knowing Monica is going to be on, and go into it with an open mind. Can this person win? And I think you will find that the answer is yes.
Or at least, you know, listen to our Samoa chapter. Because yes. Really, at the time we recorded that,
the rumors
we started
were out there,
hearing the whispers of Monica Padilla could be in the mix to go back onto Survivor.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know that it was before that they had announced anything, but the whispers were out there. Monica was in the mix.
Yeah. And, you know, it was very fun watching her game in that context.
Yeah. Catherine Lucas wants to know, what has happened to the Final Tribal Council? Is it completely irrelevant now, and what can be done to fix it?
Interesting. You know, I asked Carolyn on the red carpet if the show just cut her opening comments and Mike's opening comments and Will's opening comments. No, they didn't make them.
Whoa.
They didn't make them. They according to Carolyn, at least, you know, maybe that's a different story if you talk to somebody else, but from what she told me, they didn't even make them. So obviously things are changing a little bit in terms of the Final Tribal.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Joe came up and he kind of delivered the opening statements.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's the move of like, take like the least confrontational person on the jury.
Yeah.
And instead of like having them ask a lame question, like, all right, you know, go up there and open up the throw out the first pitch, Joe. It's like, all right, we're here tonight. Mike, here's what we want to see from you. You know, Carolyn, here's what we want to see from you.
Yeah.
And just sort of frame the discussion.
Yeah. Did you like that from Joe?
It was fun. What was he going to do?
I don't know.
I mean, does Joe have another gear?
Ask Mike what he would do on a date with him. Ask him if the way plays translates to the bedroom.
I'm interested when we go back and watch this for Evolution Strategy, like later on this summer. Like, I'm interested to see if there was any other part of Joe. You know, he made the fake idol and he was nice to Nina and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't remember too much of him other than winning those challenges.
He's a beautiful man.
He's a very handsome guy.
A handsome guy.
He's a handsome guy.
Yeah.
All right. Ron Chan wants to know, Rob and Josh, which players from this season have a chance to win Mr. and Miss Survivor? Is it too early? Now, hold on. Are we talking about second chance? Or are we talking about for...
Well, we have the full field right now. We could talk about the full field.
I don't want to spend more than 30 seconds on this, but boy, the tabulator is going to... There could be 10 million ballots cast in January.
Or Mr. Survivor. Absolutely.
Wow.
I think the only way that it's somebody from Worlds Apart is if it's Mike or Joe. And otherwise I think we're going to be talking about a lot.
Joe would have the leg up right now. Joe would have the leg up right now because he's going to go back to back.
Right. I think, you know, there's certainly possible that Spencer could.
No, Spencer.
I know he said he's going to take himself out of the running, but I think that's just talk.
Boy, won't he look bad if he then decides to run after
he reneges?
Yeah. Well, won't people throw that in his face in the debates?
Yeah.
I feel like I saw this happen to somebody once.
That's assuming these people would go back and listen to his podcast.
Okay. All right. I would think a lot of the second chancers listen to Spencer's podcast.
What do you think, Joe? Joe's your answer?
Joe would be the odds on the chalk pick right now.
Sure.
Followed in some order by Stephen Fishback, Spencer, and Mike.
Oh, I didn't even think about Stephen. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. Fishback.
It's going to be one hell of a race.
Fishback to the future.
Yeah. And then Miss Survivor is going to be a big, whole big thing.
That's going to be great.
All right. Mike Stevenson, Ding, Marry, Kill, Stingray, Dead Fish, or Howler Monkey? Ding the Howler Monkey, right?
Ding the Howler Monkey for sure.
Yeah.
It's going to get dirty, but you're going to like it.
Yeah.
I think you've already killed the dead fish, right? You can't kill it again.
I think kill it again. I think
so you're marrying the dead fish.
I think maybe ding the stingray, marry the howler monkey.
I don't think you want to ding the stingray.
It'd be a one hell of a ding.
It would
It'd be a ding and a sting.
Yeah, I think he married the stingray because the stingray is gonna be stealthy and lethal and do a lot of damage for you. You want to be on the side of the stingray. And I think he just like re-killed the dead fish. You just like stab it a few more times.
Yeah. Okay. And let's see. One more question from Laura. Laura Dean wants to know, would Mike's win have been more impressive if he hadn't been immune for every tribal council from the final nine onwards?
Probably. Yeah. But in a way, but you know what he's able to do on a challenge level in, you know, a position where he really needs to win those challenges to me is super impressive. So I think it would be very impressive in a different way. I think it would be different, but I think that what he was able to do here is really kind of remarkable.
What do you think of this? If Mike didn't become the target at Final Nine, does Mike, and forget about the Dan and Will stuff, does Mike become the villain of the season?
I don't know. It's such a strange question because the alliance was so gigantic. Like who would be the hero?
It's like every week now we're tuning in. Can somebody stop Mike in terms of voting people out?
Right. Yeah. I guess maybe. But who's the hero in this scenario? You know, we're
or is he kind of like a, you know,
Joe and the
Boston
other
Rob on his fourth time?
Right.
And would you? I guess is he like a Tom Westman at that point?
Right.
So probably not a villain.
I don't see it. I don't see
probably not as popular though.
Maybe not. Maybe not. I think that, you know, back up against the wall, Mike Holloway is it's the right look for that guy.
Okay. All right. Are you ready to talk about what is going on social media?
Of course.
With these survivors.
Let's do it.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than seeing Rodney dressed up like Joaquin. Tweets.
was Rodney dressed up like Joaquin?
Yeah, it looks like it came out of Wok's wardrobe. That's hilarious.
Which one? The blue suit came out of Joaquin's.
It looks like it. It was like a white collar, blue collar.
White collar, blue collar.
Yeah.
Okay.
The white collar version of blue collar.
All right. Of course, every week we like to follow which survivors are going to be celebrating a damn birthday, right?
Of course.
That's always fun that we get to do. And that would be...
I was really... Were you surprised when you spoke with Will and it turned out that that's his actual voice and that's just how he speaks in conversation?
And Will does have a big... span of like a vocal
wide range.
Yes.
Yeah.
You gotta go low and high and
hey,
all over.
He's
place.
Internet famous for this.
Yes. There you go. I think also underreported from the finale is Will going down the big slides. Anytime Will and slides.
The reaction to that in the room was amazing because at first, like, it seemed like he was doing okay. Like the first slide, it's like, oh, he figured out slides. And then the second slide, it's like, oh, okay. Will and slides still not getting along. Okay.
Let's just go through this real quick. The happy 4-0, Matt Bischoff.
Oh, nice. Happy birthday, Matt.
May 21st. Melinda.
Melinda.
One of the tribe mates of Shane Powers, yeah. Right? Her birthday is May 23rd. And another one of Shane Powers, Kasaya 6 members, May 24th, Courtney Merritt's birthday.
Courtney Merritt. Oh, we're so blessed.
How old is Courtney Merritt going to be?
Oh, don't make me answer this on the air.
Why not?
I'm not going to just guess.
Why not?
I'm not prepared.
Yeah, give me a number.
40?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, Courtney Merritt turns 40 on May 24th.
That's a little stressful.
Yeah. Ashley Massaro turns 35 on May 26th.
Nice, Antonio's sister.
Yes. Carter Williams.
Carter. Do you feel like Wu getting on this season is like, it's the same as if like we'd put Carter on there?
Wu's better in challenges, I think, than Carter.
But the similar feeling in terms of like, Carter was fine.
Carter, I'll take Wu over Carter.
Okay.
If you give me the choices. Like if Wu's Chipotle, like I don't know what Carter is. Carter is like
Chipotle.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
what place it is?
Oh, Carter.
Yeah, Carter is Subway. I think.
Oh, hey, I ate Subway this week.
Carter way. Okay. Hayden Moss. He turns 28 on May 27th. Katie Gallagher has a birthday on the 28th.
Wow.
Elizabeth Filarski, 37 on May 28th.
Hasselbeck.
Yeah, Lisa Welchel. Her birthday is the 29th. Alec Christie.
Man,
he is a year collector. His birthday is on May 30th.
I'm a meat collector.
How old is he?
He is 22, believe it or not.
Wow, very young man.
Yeah. And finally, one of the left out 11 has a birthday on May 31st.
Who is it?
She would have had a damn birthday on Survivor. Michaela.
Ah, Michaela.
Michaela, I got you a McCake for your birthday.
A McCake.
All right. Here we go. Let's hear what Eliza has to say.
Of course. Let's start with the obvious.
Okay. Fire making challenge. Would love that. I would have done anything to compete against Twyla or Scout in a Final Four tie challenge.
Wow.
Yeah.
You'll take Eliza in a fire making challenge over Twyla?
Why?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Okay. Then Eliza also said, these men are so gross. This Dan Montage is sick. He should not blame editing. This is outrageous. He sucks so much.
Oh.
Come on, Eliza.
Yeah, I suck.
Aww. Can we give a tip of the hat? You know, Dan gets a lot of crap, and a lot of it, deservedly so. Some of it maybe not. You know, Dan controversial figure either way. But can we give him this one thing? During Shireen's speech, and she's giving up like the whole dead fish thing, and she's about to say it again, and we turn to the jury, and Dan goes, "Dead fish." I thought that was the funniest line of the finale.
Did you like when he said, get wood?
Oh, that was actually better. Dan provided some humor in this episode.
Yeah.
Like Dan get it, like sitting down, coming back up. I thought he would sit down again and get back up one more time. Dan was great in this finale. He really was. Very funny.
Okay. All right. Then we also had Eliza say, Dan is a jerk, plain and simple. Don't clap for this piece of S word. Mm-hmm. For them to spend so much time on this, clearly he's the worst.
I do think the room was kind of on Dan's side.
I think that they felt like, oh my God, this is going on so long. It's almost like it was at the point where
it was very uncomfortable.
You know the thing where King Joffrey is torturing somebody, sure, in front of everybody, yeah, and people are like, okay, he's had enough.
Right.
He's had enough.
Right.
It's like, no, he needs a little more.
Yeah.
Like, let's show him some clips. We've got some unedited footage. Like,
sure.
Oh, please, God, no.
Yeah. No, it was very uncomfortable. It was really tough to sit through.
Your grace. I think that's well enough.
brutal, brutal, yeah. Brutal.
No, like, well, I'm standing for the integrity of the kingdom. Your grace, please.
No, I'm not done yet.
Show that it's unlucky to not show mercy on the finale day. poor Dan.
Yeah, it's a tough situation.
Yeah. Can I take back poor Dan? He made this mess. It's his fault.
Sure.
He did this.
Yeah.
All he had to do when he did these exit interviews a couple of weeks ago was just like, I said some dumb things out there. Why did I open my big mouth? Like, yeah. Boy, I cringe when I watch that.
Yeah.
But then he went on the offensive and hopefully, and now I think on top of it, now I think he feels like now he was wronged. Like, I think that he feels like that they would then went over the top at
the finale.
Know, right. So,
yeah,
I felt like we were starting to make some progress.
Do you think that it's regressed because of that?
I don't know. Well, now he's angry, I think, again.
Yeah. Are you going to talk to Dan?
Should I?
If he wants to come on.
He said to me, he's like, he really wants to come back on.
I'd be interested to listen to it, actually.
I don't mind. Like, I'd be happy to talk to him. And I try to talk some sense into, like, here's where I think the problem is.
Right.
So I don't have an issue with it, but that, like, I know there's some people that are going to be like, oh, I don't want to hear that, but I can say, well, then don't listen.
Yeah. Don't listen. No, I think if Dan wants to do it and if you're up for it, Rob, I give you the vote. I would like to listen to that podcast.
Josh Wiglis says yes.
Yes.
Okay. Jervis tweets, what the what? I know somebody up there doesn't know how to make fire.
What the what?
Jervis also said, damn, that jury drank a lot of Haterade before they sat down.
Yeah, They're drinking something, obviously.
Is it true that Haley drank so much Haterade the night before that she threw up?
Fruit punch flavored Haterade that stained her eye?
Yeah. Jervis says, Dan, it's an easy fence to mend. It's a game, my man. Not real life. You lost, but don't be a poor sport.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Jerv would know.
Yes. Jervis says, Jeff just put Dan on blast. Damn. Don't F with Survivor.
Honestly, that was like, that was Jeff Probst, like talk show host at his most. Mm-hmm. How many, can I say Ost?
Yes.
My favorite show is Lost.
Yes. All right. Then Penner. Some Penner. You ready for some Penner tweets?
Of course.
Penner said, hashtag Survivor finale. Love a puzzle. Too few this season. And Mama C is married to a cute dude. And Mike's mom raised two horrible kids.
Does he not like Mike?
No, that's what, well,
I know Mike said it.
Yeah, Mike said that.
Yeah.
Then Penner said, hashtag Survivor finale. Rodney Sr. looks like his kid, but no hair or tats. Sierra's dad is also mute. Will's wife is adorable. Penner said,
great observations from JP.
Hashtag Survivor finale. Guys, seriously, Becky and Sundra taught you nothing. This is awful.
Did Rodney talk to you about Survivor Cook Islands, Rob?
Did Rodney talk? No, he did not.
He talked to me.
How did that come up?
He brought it up. I haven't published the exit interview with Rodney yet. But when you read it, it will be almost exclusively about the fire making challenge that he lost on. He was very fired up about talking about it. And he asked me have you ever seen Survivor Cook's Island? And he brought up the Becky and Sundra thing.
Too many Cook's Island?
Too many Cook's Island. He brought up the Becky and Sundra thing. I asked him if it was like therapeutic for him to go back and watch and know at least his fire making thing.
They didn't have to give him matches.
He's really upset about that.
Oh, he wanted matches?
No, he doesn't like that that they were being given extra flint over and over and over again, because on Survivor Cook's Island with Becky and Sundra, when Sundra runs out of matches, she just has to watch.
Yeah.
And he feels like that should have been what happened after Carolyn broke her first flint.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go into, are you ready to hear from the man, the myth, the legend? Are you ready to hear from Rupert?
Am I playing the Rupert game?
Are you up for it?
Oh, God. Yeah,
let's do it. You're tired today.
No, let's do it.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert. Tweets, they're better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Okay.
All right.
All right, here we go. Number one.
I really should have read Rupert's timeline before I came over here.
Number one. Minutes away from picking another $1 million Soul Survivor winner. Okay?
All right.
Number two. This has got to be the most gentle final tribal council I've ever seen.
Huh.
Number three. I'm rooting for a tie at final tribal council. Why not? It'd be crazy. One from each tribe, BTW. And number four. I sure do miss sitting backstage watching the hashtag Survivor finale on the monitors and waiting to see who walks away with that big check.
Okay.
Sometimes it's even me and I didn't even win the game. Okay.
Legit.
Yeah. Okay. So we have three Rupert tweets. And the fake tweet is from Billy Garcia.
The fake? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, if I had known that, can I see those? Or do you have the answer?
Yeah, you can't see them. You can't see the paper.
Okay. Huh. Gentlest, so somebody actually said gentlest final tribal council ever.
Most gentle final tribal council.
Wow. Well, Rupert and Billy Garcia haven't watched a lot of Survivor, either one of those two. Interesting. I think
it was more gentle than San Juan del Sur.
Can I hear them again?
Okay. Minutes away from picking another $1 million Soul Survivor winner. This has got to be the most gentle final tribal council I've ever seen. I'm rooting for a tie at Final Tribal Council. Why not? It'd be crazy. One from each tribe, BTW.
I think that's Billy Garcia.
I sure do miss sitting backstage watching the Survivor finale on the monitors, waiting to see who walks away with the big check.
I think it's three. I think three is Billy Garcia. I'm going to go with final answer.
Got it. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, we couldn't go into the off season on a down note on the Rupert tweet game.
Tweets, baby tweets, Rupert tweets. They're better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
The BTW.
Yes.
Gives it away.
So funny though.
That's great.
Okay. Okay. Then some other tweets. We had Stephanie and Nat 10. They posted a picture of them pouting, and they said, "This is us traumatized. Thanks for everyone who voted. We love Survivor no matter what."
Do you think we'll ever see those two on Survivor, or was this the shot?
This was it. Yeah. Okay. Then Max Dawson said, BTW at the Shireen passed me a shot of whiskey right before Jeff read off the results of the vote.
Wow. In the room.
Yeah. Shane Powers, very upset last night, tweeted, "I'm stunned and fine. And on Boston, we'll never play again. I've gone through that just the right amount of times. Really confused."
Yeah, you believe him. You believe him. If he's saying it on Boston, I think that we missed on our shot to ever see Shane play again.
Yeah. Also, Jim Rice tweeted, "Congrats to you can't do that 1-2-1. Well-deserved victory."
Hey, so he's trying to, you know, he was already making strides.
He's trying to fix it.
Yeah.
Okay. Tyler Fredrickson, he tweeted, "A humble realization. I probably have a better chance of speaking on camera tonight if I'm in the audience." Well, he knew. Yeah. And then a couple other tweets. We have Jessica Lease at Haymaker Hattie says, $1 million will buy Mike a lot of tea and lozenges.
Yeah.
God knows, those are invaluable.
He's going to need it, even on a good day.
Yes. And Kurt Clark tweeted, "My next poll, whose house mysteriously burns down in the LA area tonight?" All right. Josh Wiggler, great job here with us today.
Thank you, Rob. This is very fun. I had a great time.
Yes.
I hope it's not your house.
I hope not. I hope not. I'm in communication with Shane and you know, we're working on something.
Well, okay. I look forward to listening to it. When Second Chance was announced and you and I did our podcast live right after the revelation, I said, if Shane Powers doesn't get on, we did this wrong. I think that we did this right with one very big wrong. And it is a real shame that there is no Shane.
What a crazy 15 days this has been.
For you especially, I mean, if people haven't said this on the podcast to you before, what you did interviewing all those contestants is A, phenomenal, and we're all grateful, but crazy. You're a lunatic.
Yeah, ultimately, it was 18 out of the 20 that are on the season.
That's wow. Only two who aren't.
Woo.
And that's why you don't like Woo.
Well, It doesn't help.
He didn't need the podcast vote. He had the Wiggler vote.
Woo and Joe.
Yeah. That's impressive. Very impressive. But yeah, no, you've been, and I know how many hours you've put into Evolution of Strategy too. You've been like a machine. So thumbs up to you, sir.
The number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Volume two. All right. So that is going to be dropping on Friday. You can check that out. Go to robiswebsite.com/store to go ahead and check out the chapters that are available in volume two. If you want to see more about the entire project, go to evolutionofstrategy.com and click on the sidebar on robiswebsite.com. Again, chapter 11. This isn't the chapter where we go bankrupt, right?
I don't know. Might be.
We're going chapter 11. That's right.
Seems likely.
Yeah, I like that in Spaceballs, where the scroll that starts at the top of the movie that starts off chapter 11. but chapter 11, fittingly, is Guatemala.
Yes, it is. Are you saying that's the season Survivor went bankrupt?
Morally bankrupt.
Morally bankrupt. Survivor became scumbags.
Yes, if you want to listen to that for free for the next, you can listen to it whenever, but you can get it for free for the next 7 days. Go to robiswebsite.com/store, go to the Guatemala page, and you can get it. It's $2.99 if you don't use the code or scumbags. That is the code scumbags, SCUMBAGS. If there's any confusion, you can ask Judd if you need
any. He'll let you know.
Yeah, he'll tell you. He'll say it's definitely with a K.
Definitely with a K.
Definitely with a K, man. No, scumbags is the code.
No, he wouldn't lie to you about the spelling.
No, he wouldn't.
He might start lying.
He's good at puzzles, too.
He hasn't lied yet, but he might start.
He might start. That being said, Josh, great job. And we did a Game of Thrones feedback show here today on postshowrecaps.com. If you missed it ever, Josh and I, we cover Game of Thrones weekly on postshowrecaps.com. Josh is always covering a bunch of other stuff on postshowrecaps.com. Check out Josh's exit interview articles on parade.com. You can go to robswebsite.com/parade to go right there and see all of them. And we've got our own link, our own exit interviews on the website as well. What else?
Oh, man. What else? So much.
Working on some other big stuff. Yes, it's the Survivor offseason, but don't think for a second, you know, we're taking any time off.
No.
We're just going to keep going.
You never do.
This isn't going to be like the year that I was moving and everybody thought I was going to. Imagine I was moving this week and like, God. What's going on?
Secret third chancers.
Right. That's right. No, everything is good. What's the hashtag
what's
here, Josh?
What's the hashtag? Do we bring back Survivor the movie? Can you do, can you resurrect the hashtag?
Can you bring it back? We did. Yeah,
Revolution of strategy. You could do hashtag
BTW.
Hashtag, I think hashtag BTW is taken.
That's probably people using that too much.
Probably taken.
Yeah. Let's see. Anything else from all of this? Survivor the movie 2.
Sure.
The sequel.
Yeah.
The sequel.
I like that.
It's like an anthology. It's like True Detective. Every time it's different.
Oh, okay. Man. Different actors.
Yeah. All right.
When is McConaughey going to play Holloway?
Yes. Yes.
That's pretty good.
Can you do McConaughey?
No. Not on command.
Neither can I.
No.
Neither can I. All right. Everybody, thank you so much. Such a fun season to talk about. And, you know, no matter what happens, it's always great to go through this. This is officially the end of, I believe, the 11th season that we've covered here on Rob as a Podcast.
Wow.
And really, really fun. We're going to be doing our weekly off-season Survivor podcast. And maybe we don't do, one every single week, but we're going to shoot for one a week. All the way through. And of course, Big Brother is right around the corner. So don't go anywhere. We're going to have much more still about Worlds Apart. And of course, everything with Survivor Second Chance coming up. So have a great Memorial Day weekend. Check out the Evolution of Strategy coming up this weekend. Compliments of Josh and myself. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.